the question is being raised with regard to what somebody heard at a shiur, that some Rav mentioned a case that during the Holocaust, some individual went to a Rav and asked him whether he should stay in Europe or whether he should escape to America. And the Rav, I mean, according to the story, this has just been presented to me. I can't verify any of the details over here, but it doesn't matter. Let's assume that this occurred. According to the story that's being presented, this Rav decided that it's better to stay in Europe, where it's virtually assured that you're going to be killed, rather than go to America, because America was, so to speak, trafe, meaning that all the negative influences in terms of a person's religiosity, in terms of his morality and so forth, being that there were so many harmful influences in America, it's the halacha would be to stay in Europe, in spite of the fact that the person would die. And the question that arose was, how could it be that this could happen, that if a person would go to a Rav, ostensibly, presumably, wants to know what the right thing to do is, how could it be as a result of going to the Rav that the person would wind up being killed? That was the question. And the answer that was given was that to the contrary, what actually occurred was the right thing, because apparently it was God's judgment that this individual should die in the Holocaust. And therefore, I assume the intention is that the rabbi did not make a mistake and he gave the correct judgment. The issue as to whether the Rav made a mistake or didn't make a mistake, that has to be analyzed from the standpoint of the psak, the decision itself. It has nothing to do with the outcome. If a judge makes a mistake, I would assume that this person holds that judges make mistakes. Dayanim make mistakes. We're learning sugyas in the Sanhedrin now, which talks about dayan shata, a dayan who erred. There's cases in the Sanhedrin. The Gemara brings down many cases. There's cases where a dayan made a mistake, a Sanhedrin made a mistake with regard to paskening a case. The Gemara Sanhedrin talks about someone that made a mistake with regard to dini nefashos and executed a person, had a person executed, even though he didn't have two witnesses to aid him. And for the rest of his life, he would go to the grave and cry because he had taken someone's life whose life did not deserve to be taken. There's no question at all that dayanim, even great dayanim, can make mistakes. That's why that issue is a very prominent issue in Sanhedrin. With regard to dine mamonos, with regard to, that is to say, monetary cases, with regard to cases pertaining to people's lives, anyone who's human can err. And indeed, in the entire Torah and Tanakh, virtually every one of the great individuals, including Moshe Rabbeinu, is depicted at some point as making a mistake. So, therefore, there is no question that if you're going to evaluate decisions, they have to be evaluated from the standpoint of the possibility that the person made a mistake. If you can have this attitude that it couldn't have been mistaken, that it had to be correct, that's absurd. You can never learn. Then you have to assume whatever a judge says, whatever a rabbi. Certainly, we're talking today about a rabbi. We're not talking about the great the judges of the past. And just because a rabbi says something doesn't make it correct. That would be an absurd attitude. It's also highly questionable to me whether this even constitutes a valid shiloh that you would go to a rav for. I don't. At first glance, it's not clear to me why would a person even ask such a question. When it's unless he doesn't know anything about Judaism, it's clear. And I can't imagine any religious authority that would have paskened in that kind of a way. It's clear from the Torah itself and from the conduct of all of the Gedolim that a person had to do everything possible. I know Jews in the free world in America had to do everything possible to engage in rescue. In rescue to get the Jews of Europe out of there, to bring them to any safe haven. America would be the best. The best possible situation was to be here in America. And Rav Moshe Feinstein and other good, Rav Kutler, Rav Aaron Kutler, Rav all Gedolim, some of them were saved and came to America. To the notion that anyone had an opportunity to escape and was deterred from doing so by someone who would call himself a Rav would be the most misbegotten kind of a phenomenon. There's a serious issue in terms of the role of American Jewry and the Jewish organizations. Did they do enough during the Holocaust? Did they put enough pressure? They've been criticized that they didn't do enough. They were too passive. Should have demonstrated more vociferously against the government to enable more rescue to take place. So you see from that, that's the criticism, that they were too passive. But the notion of actually a Jew who had the opportunity to escape and to turn the person back to that, from a rav no less, because of some kind of a calculation that it's treif in America, it's insanity. This is absolute insanity. And this rav went on to say that you can't fault the decision because whatever happened is what God wanted to happen. Anyways, so therefore the decision can't be faulted. That's absolutely contrary to Judaism, to Torah, to Halacha.
That's why
to the contrary, according to this, you can't learn from any kind of a mistake. How are you going to learn from the mistake? We don't maintain that. We maintain there's a phenomenon of free will. And if a person acts recklessly and gets himself into trouble, they're responsible for the harm that they caused to themselves. You can't say, well, no, it's what God wanted to happen, otherwise it wouldn't have happened. So therefore it was strict justice. That's really what God wanted. That's an absolute absurdity. There's a concept of free will. The person asked that correctly. I don't understand why the person would go to Rav and ask on a question like this. As I said, unless that person didn't know and thought that there was an issue over here. But I'm totally astounded. I can't believe that any Rav would tell a person to give up their life or to put their life in jeopardy. This is one of the most serious areas of the entire Torah.
Isn't this brought up about the problem?
This person then goes on to say that this is true with regard to any calamity that occurs. For example, 9/11. That is every particular individual who was on one of the airplanes or in the World Trade Center, whatever happened, is strict justice. Everybody got exactly what they deserved. This was the will of God. I maintain that that is not the case. The entire battle against evil in this world, it seems to me, is premised upon the fact that evil is something contrary to the will of God. We're supposed to destroy Amalek. But if Amalek only can do those things that are really good, carrying out the will of God, even though that may not be their intention, what then is the evil? If he's exonerating the rabbi, that the rabbi's mistake here should not be treated seriously. That's what he seems to be saying. I mean, I don't even know if he's calling it a mistake. Obviously, this is a mistake. If there was a rabbi who decided that Jews should remain behind and get killed in Europe rather than come to America. That is to say that coming to America is such a serious avera that it's yahar v'alyava, that one should rather give one's life. We do have cases like that, where the halacha demands that you sacrifice your life. Three cases: idolatry, adultery, and the like, similar sexual crimes, and the murder. You can't kill somebody else to save your life. Those three. In those three cases, you are obligated to give up your own life. But in every other case, including Shabbos, you're saving your life. The saving of a life is the most, just about the most significant mitzvah that a person can possibly do. And taking a life, or being gorim, or causing a life, is the worst possible tragedy. So how can you say that a thing like this, it's like taking lightly, made a mistake, didn't make a mistake, in reality it's what God wanted. I mean, that's not an absurdity. If you can maintain that kind of view, so then the whole foundation, the whole framework of good and evil and free will, it's all completely removed. There's no idea like that. That is to say that people think that this is a profound piece of wisdom. Nothing happens by accident. There are no coincidences. That's absolutely absurd. How do you know that? How do you know what happens in the universe? That's a very serious question with regard to the element of the relationship between divine providence. There's a world of reality out there. This is based upon the phenomenon of a world of reality. You see the explanation of the chinuch, for example, with regard to the mitzvah of ma'akeh, that a person is obligated to put up a fence, a railing around his roof to prevent any, and he cannot maintain any dangerous situations in the house, things that could lead to danger. He takes up this issue. He says, for people on a very, very high level, the closer a person is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more they come under his particular, specific providence, protective providence. But this does not extend equally and doesn't extend automatically just to anyone. If a person's, and this, by the way, is not just the Chinuch, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Sforno, everybody takes this position. And by and large, a person has to assume, always assume, that the outcome, his fate, so to speak, is going to be determined by how he conducts himself. He has to give credence to the laws of nature. Otherwise, why go to a doctor? Why act with any type of a consideration to the forces of nature? Whatever you do, it's going to be determined. A person is going to drive recklessly, so he's going to increase his chances of getting killed. Can't rely on any something on ace. You can't rely on ace. You can't rely on miracles. We have tefillah. We pray to God. We believe in the phenomenon, but we don't claim that we know in what cases it's going to manifest itself or in what cases it won't manifest itself, and then the outcome is going to be determined by the forces of nature. That's the basis of human responsibility. It's a tremendous responsibility that you have to assume when you make a decision, when you give a person advice, and whenever you get involved in anything, you have to make your determinations purely on the basis as if there were no Hashgacha, purely on the basis of the natural phenomena. Then you turn to God. That's the idea of Ishtadlus, when Yaakov prepared to meet his brother Esav. Of course, there was tefillah. But the idea of just sitting back and assuming that it doesn't make any difference, it's all by share anyways, that's an absurdity. He engaged in all of the possible preparations to the best of his intelligence, his resources. You see the way he worked at every particular detail. Not just to give a gift, but how it was presented and it was organized and so on and so forth. If a person is in a dangerous situation, a person has been hijacked, and he uses his resources and courage, and he sees an opportunity, and he takes it, and he escapes. Well, that was even on 9/11. And that person is saved, so what's the cause of their being saved? The fact that they're a tzaddik? Or the fact that they're not or Russia, what does that have to do with it? You can explain what the causes were. The person, given that God created the world and set up a system in the natural order, and people have abilities, so then the outcome is not determined by that type of justice. The outcome in many of these situations are going to be determined by how people acted. If a person was on a ship and the ship capsizes and he knows how to swim, the person that knows how to swim and swims and gets to safety, that's why he was saved. That doesn't do with God interfering. Now, it's possible that God did. It's possible that in addition to that, he received because there was sharks in the area and God dispersed the sharks. We don't know that. And you don't have to assume that. It could be explained completely in terms of the natural Olam Kimin Hago Noah. God allowed the world to proceed in accordance with this natural law. I want to make this point. The comparison this rabbi then drew was with regard to 9/11, that everything that happened on 9/11 was strict justice in terms of what the individual deserved. I dispute that. I say that's not necessary, that's not the case. And I don't know from whence he derives that idea. To the contrary, we maintain that that was a horrendous crime in which innocent people were killed, innocent children, men, women, and children were killed. If you're going to maintain that everything that was done was strict justice, then in point of fact, so what's the tragedy? What's wrong? And if you're going to apply the same idea to the Holocaust, so then what's the tragedy of the Holocaust? Why is it a tragedy, and why should people be upset about it? And why should one seek to punish the perpetrators when the perpetrators, in fact, didn't do anything wrong? They just did something which was purely in line with God's justice. Unless you say, well, that wasn't their intention. Who cares what their intention was? The character of the deed was not evil. Where's the evil? And how can you have a whole concept in the Torah that we're obligated to fight against evil, we're obligated to fight against Amalek, when in point of fact there is no evil? There is no evil because whatever happens is purely in accordance with strict justice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If that's the case, then you've completely uprooted that whole category. And I can't see how you can maintain that that 9/11 was a bad thing. What was the bad about it? Oh, because if it wouldn't have happened, these people could have lived longer. No, but according to you, they shouldn't have lived longer. That was exactly it. That was the idea. Now we don't understand. Put aside. That's a nice cop out to say you don't understand why these children or this person or that person, whatever the case may be. Well, fine. I'll buy that. I'll buy we don't understand because there's many things that we don't understand, and it's still justice. But if that's the case, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that it's absolute justice, but there's something wrong. There's something negative about 9/11, and you can't. On what basis do you want to destroy these people? Why? So that they won't do another one? But why shouldn't you? Why should you want to eliminate them? They're whatever they're doing. They don't have the power to do evil. What you're saying is that no man has the power to do evil because to do evil would be to thwart the will of God, and the will of God cannot be thwarted. That's what you're saying. So you're saying you're taking away from man the power to do evil. So then what's the problem? Everybody's a tzaddik. Oh, you're going to say, well, no. In his own mind, he really didn't want to serve. He didn't want to serve God. Why? What is the difference, what his own intention was? You know, you're not punished. The absurdity of this position is that you're going to have to say that Hitler is to be punished. All these wicked people are punished, not for what they did, but because of bad kavanos. Yeah, but other people, everybody has bad kavanos, bad intentions. We don't punish people for bad intentions. In point of fact, you're saying that everyone that died, that was strict justice. The issue is being raised with regard to Paro. The Rambam raises the issue with regard to Paro, that Paro was punished for his affliction of the Jews. So let's ask ourselves the question, was the affliction of the Jews justice or wasn't it justice, according to this? And if it was justice, so why is Paro a Russia? What is he doing wrong? Now, it seems pretty clear from the psukim that it was contrary to God's will. God wanted them to leave. And Paro was not acting in accordance with God's will. However, the Rambam raises this question. The Rambam raises the question that the enslavement of the Jews was something which was predicted. God told this, communicated this to Avraham Avinu. Therefore, it was already foreseen by God. So the Rambam says, if that's the case, it had to take place. It's something that was, so to speak, preordained. That's what troubles the Rambam. What troubles the Rambam is that if it was preordained, so then Paro did not have the power not to do it. If God takes away a person's free will and coerces the person to do a certain thing, even if that thing is evil, so then why should he be punished? That's the question. The Rambam raises this as a challenge to the idea of free will. And the Rambam, the basic answer, which we're not going to go into right now, is to show that no, even though God knows the future, that doesn't mean to say that God is the cause. God's knowledge is different than human knowledge, and therefore what Paro did was done in accordance with his own free will. He was the cause. If Paro decided not to be a wicked person, not to be a Russia, not to afflict the Jews, then Paro would not have been forced to do it. Paro had free will up until a certain point where he lost his free will. But that's a different idea. However, you see from this that the Paro, according to the Rambam, deserves to be punished for his affliction of the Jews. For that, he deserves to be punished. As long as that's a result of his own free will. Which indicates that when a person commits evil, he's doing something which is contrary to God's will, And it's an absurdity to maintain that what is taking place is actually in accordance with God's will. And at the same time, to maintain that the one who's perpetrating it is evil. That is an absurdity. The Ramban approaches the answer in a different way. And the Ramban, because the Ramban does not take this approach. He says that why should they be punished? They're doing, that was the will of God. That the Jews should be enslaved and afflicted, that was God's will. By the way, the Ramban's formulation of the question is in line with what I'm saying. That if what indeed is taking place, because the Ramban could have simply said, yeah, but that wasn't their intention. If what is taking place is actually just from the standpoint of God, so then the one who's doing it shouldn't be punished for it. Because he's not doing an evil. But the Ramban says that they went above and beyond. They did much worse than the decree of God warranted. So that's where they're liable. I think that clearly, both the Rambam and the Ramban clearly support my point. It is completely absurd position. According to this position, then nobody should ever stand up to oppose a Holocaust, to oppose any type of evil that is happening in the world. Atrocities are happening all the time. Now, we assume that they are atrocities because they're contrary to justice, to what ought to be. They're contrary to the will of God, and we have to fight against it. That's part of our perfection, that God wants us to take up the battle against evil. But I can't reconcile, if you're going to say that everything that's happening is perfect justice, so then to stand up against Hitler and try to put an end to the Holocaust would be interfering with perfect justice. Now, to make this last connection, this individual is vindicating the rabbi who made the decision, the horrible decision, that a person should stay in a place where they're going to get killed rather than come to America. And now, in retrospect, does not want to attribute any blame to this rabbi. Because even though maybe it's the wrong decision from a halachic standpoint, but if the person died, that was clearly justice. So what difference would this person make between that rabbi, who was responsible for this person's death, and the perpetrators of 9/11, who were responsible for all those deaths, given that all those deaths were purely in accordance with strict justice? According to this, this type of an approach removes the whole idea of evil. It also removes the whole idea of free will. And if I decide, if a person decides to get up right now and go to the Kennedy Airport and put a bomb, so fine, go ahead and do so. Because you can't do any harm. The only people that are going to get hurt are those whose time is up. It's been decreed. So you're not responsible for anything then. You're removing the element of responsibility from Adam. If you do that, you're uprooting Kol HaTorah Kula. There's no Torah anymore. Everything is predetermined. You take a look at the case of the first murder. God rebukes Cain. Kol Demei Achicha Tzalakim Meilayim in Adama. The voice of the blood of your brother, the blood, your brother and the children and so on. That is to say that this is not what should have happened. He did not deserve to die. You tell me that Hevel deserved to die? Whoever maintains that is denying Kol HaTorah Kula. Absolute denial. This type of an idea, I'm being told that this is becoming more prominent now, this way of thinking. Because people apparently can't take the fact that there's a lot of atrocities being perpetrated, like the ones that are taking place in Israel, for example. So therefore, rather than deal with the problem and try and get genuine answers, they have to fall back on these emotionalistic theologies, which perhaps are more comforting. I don't see how this is more comforting to believe this. But this is a distortion of Judaism. And it's like I was speaking about this morning. It's very, very serious and sinful. Distortion of Judaism, to me, it's no different than the conservative reform. It's all distortion of Judaism. Where they do so in terms of what's halachically applicable the Bizman Hazeh in this time, here it's in terms of the fundamental concepts of Judaism. Both are very, very serious deviations, distortions of Torah. It turns out, according to this position, that if a person goes off and fights against the terrorists, so in point of fact, he's not doing a righteous thing. He's thwarting God's will. Because whatever the terrorist is going to bring about is actually God's will. So now, what are you supposed to do? Thwart God's will? Let them triumph. Sit back and triumph. Obviously, all of Judaism cries out against this. Habola argecha, hashkem v'hargo. Someone comes to kill you, go out and kill him first. But nobody can hurt you. What do you mean? But if a guy's coming to kill you, he's going to be successful. That's what God wants.
I asked you that.
A good point is being made. If you want to carry this out to its logical extreme, it would seem, if you're going to say it's God's will, that they should do whatever they're doing. Is that that's God's will. And we also have to fight them because it's God's will that we should fight them. So then God's will is in contradiction to itself. You're going to come to this logical absurdity, all because of the underlying foundation of this approach is absolutely false. That is to say that every particular event that occurs is a direct result of God's will with regard to those particular individuals. That concept of hashkach, of divine providence, is incorrect. And that has to be studied very, very carefully. That we assert that God rules the world. We assert that God rules the world with justice. And there are two concepts of hashkacha. The hashkacha is God manifests himself in the laws of nature. The laws of nature we take very, very seriously. And for some individuals, that's their status in the eyes of God, that they're under the influence, so to speak, of the laws of nature. And they do not warrant necessarily any particular intervention. So that is the idea that a person could be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, p'derech ha-teva, that's the way you have teva, you have nature, you have a system, you have airplanes flying, you have people making appointments, and so on and so forth. And then when you have wicked people who get on an airplane and are undetected, whatever the case is, there's a lot of other factors. What should be looked into is how people allowed this to come about. All the years that he was out there, bin Laden, and nobody did anything about it, that's a different type of a problem. However, it does not mean to say that this particular person arrived at the airport too late. That was God. We don't know. This particular person planned out the trip. Who knows? At the time they planned the trip, it may not have been on the terrorist list. It could have been a last-minute change. And does it mean that every person that was in that position at that time could have been there because of the natural factors? And that's it. They did not warrant to be on a higher level. And there may have been those who did. And I'm sure there are many people that, looking back, find that they were not there because of amazing circumstances. Could be. They don't know. Then they themselves don't know, because sometimes these coincidences do occur. Coincidences definitely occur. A person likes to think, when it occurs, for a positive thing, he likes to think that God was there saving him, that he's the tzaddik, and all those other people, they were rishayim, they deserve to die. You're going to fall into all kinds of absurdities if you maintain a thing like that. Because you're going to be driven away from Judaism. You have all these cases, to the best of our knowledge, and unfortunately in Eretz Israel now, where young people, good people, righteous people, all kinds of people have been affected. So I don't know what your category is going to be. How you're going to find, you're going to assume that all of these tzaddikim have somehow or other committed such serious, terrible sins that they deserve to be killed at this point. It's going to be totally, you're going to arrive at the absurd. And there's no reason why you have to do so. If you understand, you accept the fact that it is not a premise of the Torah, that every individual's life is always under the particular, the hashkacha, what we call the hashkacha pratis, the particular hashkacha, determining at this particular time that he has to be killed. We do not maintain that that's the case.